The next lesson in our book on page 14 is the discipline of singing. This is one that we're going to be more familiar with. Something that we do every Lord's Day. We will do it this evening. It's part of the worship that we offer. It is something that is very enjoyable. By the way, we have a singing upcoming on Saturday. So let's keep that in mind and be here for that. But if you look at the introduction of this lesson, we've discussed already prayer, meditation, and fasting. Discipline is yet, singing is yet another discipline. It is one we engage in regularly. We want to discuss a little bit about how singing can be a discipline. Remember, in all of these things, we are exercising ourselves towards spirituality and maturity. We are striving to engage in activities that will strengthen us, that will prepare us, that will help us as we seek to live for the Lord. Singing does have that beneficial aspect to it. On Sunday morning in our study on the book of James and the other epistles, you remember the admonition there in James chapter 5, that if any among you is cheerful, let him sing. And so there is, again, cause for singing. It is something that is beneficial and helpful to us. I think that those who have a propensity toward it, especially, recognize how easily touched you can be and encouraged you can be through singing. I'm not going to say from that, as far as the outward essential aspect, that everyone has the same reaction to singing. Now, I told you a while back that I'm really not touched by poems all that much. I will make the exception. Poetry set to music does make a difference. whenever I sing, the melody as a part of or in addition to the lyrics is something that is touching. You recognize and appreciate the beauty of the voices. There is joy in lifting up your lips, the fruit of your lips, as praise to God, and having the opportunity to offer praise to God and worship Him in this way. It is truly a blessing. Having said that, I do recognize that not everyone has an ability to sing prettily. Now remember that it's a inability to sing. I recognize, though, that some are either tone deaf or nearly there and have some difficulty. I think that's one of the most interesting aspects of singing is that as an offering of praise to God, let's put this, a musical offering, that individuals can benefit from it, both with regard to the worship offered as well as the edification and strengthening that is the result of it, whether they have the ability to carry it or not, whether they have any training or not. And that's not necessarily the case with worship that is offered with mechanical instruments, as is the practice in the denominations. If I'm tone deaf, or I do not have an appreciation for fine music, and I sit and I listen to an orchestra perform a piece. The piece may be very beautiful and stirring. To some, I sit there and it does nothing for me. It's kind of like the cliche of man going to the opera. You know, it's just big people singing. That's all it is. You know, it doesn't appeal. For some people, instruments and such, it has some great appeal. Even if you have difficulty with regard to the music itself, the words are there, and the words edify, and the sentiments are often beautifully expressed. And so it is something that truly is encouraging. I think the Lord, you know, when you ask, well, why is it that we are told to sing but are not given authority to use an instrument? Because of the purpose behind it and the nature of it. The problem is, I suppose, somewhat speculative as to why God said what He said. I do recognize that since edification is the primary purpose of singing, that edification is in no way improved through the introduction of mechanical instruments, but it certainly can be obscured because the edification is in the message. And so there is cause for us to use the a cappella singing. Of course, that's not the purpose of this lesson, trying to establish a cappella singing slash versus mechanical instruments of music. what we're going to be emphasizing here is the benefit of singing and the purpose of it. You'll notice under letter B, he said, I wonder if some do not appreciate the value of singing. Many Christians sing with virtually no emotion. Some do not sing at all. It has always been my observation, and I've been, of course, a member of several different congregations over the years, and almost every congregation at some point in time, though we no longer do it for years we did, they have Wednesday night singings. So you'll have three Wednesday nights a month or four Wednesday nights a month where there's a class, and then the Wednesday night when it's just singing night, invariably the numbers are smaller than when there are classes. And when that's consistent, and when it's that way in just about every congregation, that's an indication that some people, when it comes to just singing, aren't interested. And they're less likely to show up. So that's a shame. Perhaps by this study, it will allow some of us that may not quite have the appreciation we might could have to gain a greater appreciation for the act of worship. It's, of course, an important act of worship because it's one that is commanded by God. And as we look at the reason why God has us sing and how we can go about it to improve our singing, that might be something that will help us. Okay, so introductory thoughts aside, anybody want to add anything to our discussion before we get into the purpose of singing in Roman numeral 1? Yes, Dennis?
Just a quick thought here to begin, since these are introductory remarks, and I didn't notice that there's anything about this in the lesson anywhere. 1 Timothy 2, verse 11 and 12 says, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. I do not permit a woman to teach and have authority over a man, but to be in silence. And that's a practice in the worship service. A thing that can be emphasized about singing is this is a sister's opportunity to teach with her voice and sing out, and louder with her voice and express her feelings, and even write a song if she wants to have that song sung in worship. We sing many songs that were written by women. So that's something that often doesn't get emphasized whenever we look at the subject of singing.
It is an opportunity for the ladies to edify. As far away as that's true. Good. Anybody else?
I'm hesitant, but I would enjoy hearing the explanation for how women stay in silence is overridden by singing over here. But I was going to point out that point three here is not something unique to singing. I think everybody has their part of worship that they consider. That was the point at which I remembered Ron since we were over there and I started talking about it. I think everybody has a part of worship that they prefer. I think some people prefer class and they prefer getting the talk. I can't imagine anyone like that. Some people enjoy the sermon. Some people enjoy that format a lot more. Some people enjoy the praying. Some people enjoy the singing. And so you'll see people that are more likely to come on a singing night than they would on a class night. And you also see people that don't come to, say, nights of a gospel meeting because they're not that interested in preaching, and we may only sing a couple of songs. We've gotten in the habit of singing a bunch of songs before, but a lot of places haven't. They'll have maybe two or three songs. And people that aren't interested in that aspect won't show up for that.
You're right about that, and it is an interesting thing. It can somewhat be cyclical because I think, at least in part, as an outgrowth of some of the camps and the youth, of course, have a natural affinity for singing, that right now there's kind of a cycle out there where you're more likely to get big numbers if you have a singing than you would for a gospel meeting. More people visiting, more people coming to it, if you have really. So there are a number of annual or biannual singings that go on in Dallas or Irving and down in Houston and other places, to where you get much larger numbers of people that are coming for that than with regard to meetings. It's all right to have your favorite. It's not all right to be negligent with regard to those things that perhaps do not appeal to your imagination as much. Singing, of course, is something that is for the person who loves to sing. is going to be something that will have a specific appeal to him. And yeah, I've always appreciated those who have told me, you know, I can't carry a tune in the bucket, but I sure do enjoy the singing. Because even though they may be a bit limited, they recognize the benefit that they derive from it, and it's always important. We're not going to talk about the text of 1 Timothy and why that submission is not absolute. I'll just say that it's not, and I think I can argue that it's not, and we'll go on. So you and I can talk about that later. But anyway, so that is an important consideration as well. Looking at the purpose of singing, you'll notice letter A, first purpose, and I would say, there are three that are mentioned: upward, outward, and inward. So that's a good way of looking at it. It's a good way to remember the purpose of singing. But do recognize that first and foremost, as we offer up songs of praise, we are praising God, and God is worthy of our praise. But that is a primary purpose of our singing. It is an act of worship. And I think that the religious world, at least in part, has forgotten that. And I think that when we become enamored with either the novelty of a song, with regard to the beauty of a melody, with regard to the talent of the individuals, that it may be that we're not sufficiently thinking about the purpose of the song, and rather we are immersing ourselves too much in simply the joy of the mechanics. And I'm not accusing anyone of that. I just do realize that in me there is something of that. I'll give you an example. This has to do with mechanical instruments, but I've used this illustration to point out another lesson before. When I was in ninth grade, I wasn't in the band, I was in the choir. We had a very talented band, even as these young people were young and not really very experienced with the instruments. But there was a song from the rock opera Jesus Christ Superstar that they played. And there was a portion of that song when the timpani drums began to roll and the crescendo and everything. It just absolutely was a stirring piece of music. And as far as what I remember, an emotional involvement, an emotional response to just music, just sound, that sounds beautiful, and that's the first time I really remember being particularly influenced by that. But there was that emotional reaction simply to the music itself. I've always used that to illustrate the point that the actual lyrics of that song are blasphemous, and how that you can't tell unless you knew the message that in fact that was that's something that I found out later. But there is the emotion, and I do think that there could potentially be a danger, and that's where the religious world has gotten to the point where now these acts of singing and such are often referred to as performances, and it's very common that you will have special groups that will get up and perform. And this, of course, is becoming more prevalent in the institutional churches, not just in the denomination. I want you to think about that a moment. Let's say we've got half an hour to come together, and we've got half an hour to sing. And for that half hour, or a good portion of that half hour, what we're going to ask you to do, instead of engaging in worship to God, we're going to ask you to sit quietly while somebody else stands up there and worships God. You're not allowed to right now. We want you to be quiet. Now, after they finish, then you can applaud them for what they've done. But we ask that you be quiet and listen to them. And of course, with the denominations, ostensibly it is, listen to them worship God. Now, they consider it something to where you're included in the worship. In reality, according to what the scriptures teach, that's not so. Singing is something that we are to do to edify one another. We are all to speak to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. So what they're asking you is to sit and watch them worship. And then at the end of their period of worship, you are supposed to respond by showing your appreciation in the form of applause. Now, what is that? It's not worship, it's performance. And that's what you see often in the various denominations. It's what you see are performances. Well, why do you have that? Well, because you have talented musicians who consider it a part of their ministry to involve themselves in these religious songs and using their instruments and such. But it's just a distortion of the very simple act of lifting your voice and praise to God, something that everyone can do. I'll tell you another thing that's a little bit bothersome to me. It's nothing necessarily intrinsic wrong with it, but it bothers me just a little bit when various churches send out a circular announcing a song service and put the list of song leaders that are going to be there, especially if these are, quote, headline song leaders. And who's the headline song leader above all others right now?
R.J. Stevens.
R.J. Stevens, which is he's a wonderful man and a very great song leader. But I'll tell you something, is that if R.J. Stevens is leading the singing, perhaps his son Tim or perhaps some others that would recognize that these are recognized legitimate musicians, then more people are going to come. Why would that make a difference? I worry about it. You could say the same thing maybe with regard to preaching. Put on gospel meeting and say who's preaching, but it kind of helps to know who it is that's coming to hold the gospel meeting so that you know whether he's a teacher of righteousness or not, but he won't go. But with song leading and to make that appeal, I think it's important that we be wary of anything with regard to singing that would make it more in our minds of a performance or something to where the mechanics. The legitimacy of singing is not found in how pretty it is. Legitimacy of singing is not found in how many are there or how capable they are in the four-part harmony or anything like that. Legitimacy of singing is opening your mouth and offering up praise to God, which is the outward aspect that is alluded to in the first point. It is edifying to one another, which is the outward aspect of it as we edify one another, and then it serves that inward purpose of creating strength and encouragement with us as well. That's called getting on your soapbox, and I'm good at that. That's what I do. Anybody have comments before we get back actually to the text? What we were talking about? Okay. Every once in a while, I'm allowed to go off on a tangent. Okay, so the common concept in the purpose of singing, most common or the perhaps preeminent one, is with regard to praising God. That is the upward aspect of this. And you'll notice that there are numerous verses in the book of Psalms. Now, why would that be? Well, the book of Psalms is a book of Psalms, Hebrew Psalms. And by the way, with regard to the actual mechanics of the lyrics, those things differ with regard to cultures and times. Four-part harmony is actually something of recent origin. But the songs themselves that are mentioned in the text are just absolutely beautiful, every one of them, because the lyrics are beautiful. And but again and again and again, throughout that book of Psalms, there are praises that are offered up to God. God is worthy of our praise because He is the Creator, because He is a beneficent Father, because He sent His Son Jesus. Jesus, of course, is worthy of praise. The Holy Spirit, worthy of praise because of what they accomplished with regard to the redemption of men. Because of who they are, because of their character, nature, accomplishments, all of that. Their interaction with us, our relationship with them, worthy of praise. And it should be a primary aspect of our singing. You'll notice under point one that the term hymn is one that that covers that. We read Colossians, the third chapter. Mark did at the time that we began our lesson, that we are to speak to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Those are three different terms that are used. The word hymn means, in effect, a song of praise. It comes from the Greek word hymnos, and it means a song in praise of. And, of course, it is God who we are praising. And so the psalms that you find, the verses in the psalms that you find under point D, point two, are very good examples of this. Psalm 30, sing praise to the Lord, you saints of His, give thanks at the remembrance of His holy name. Psalm 47, verse 6, sing praises to God, sing praises Sing praises to our King. Sing praises, for God is the King of all earth. Sing praises with understanding. Psalm 95:1, O come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us shout joyfully to the rock of our salvation. You'll notice that that all of these have reference to singing. You can praise God without using the term sing in the praise itself, but these serve a dual purpose. And you'll notice they are praising God. Often it shows why. For example, letter C, or letter B, He's the King of earth. Letter C, He is the rock of our salvation. Letter E, sing to the Lord, bless His name, proclaim the good news of His salvation. So He has, of course, redeemed us. That is something worthy of praise. Psalm 98:1, sing the Lord to the Lord a new song, for He has done marvelous things. His right hand and His holy arm have gained Him the victory. And again, that has reference not only to what He's accomplished, but one attribute of His person, which is His power, the power at His right hand and His holy arm. Letter G, serve the Lord with gladness, come before His presence with singing. Psalm 135:3, praise the Lord, for the Lord is good. Sing praises to Him because He is good. He is righteous. He is holy altogether. This is cause for us to praise Him. And it is always appropriate. And by the way, that's another thing we might point out, just as a practical application. It's always good as you choose the songs. This would be something especially for song leaders. If you have a theme or a center thread, that can be beneficial and helpful. Not necessary, but certainly beneficial and helpful. But the other thing is that you take the sacred selections songbook. There is a disproportionate number of songs. And by the way, it's my favorite songbook, so I'm not being overly critical. But there's a disproportionate number of songs that would have to do with more or less with Christian living. That actual songs, doxologies of praise to God, are a little bit less represented, a little bit lower in the representation in that book. Wherein, in contrast to that, the fad, again, and I don't want to use that negative term in this sense, but the end thing to do these days, when songs are both sung in many religious groups as well as the writing of songs, it seems to me at least, and my observations in the new songs that are being written, are more often songs of praise to God and less about, I want to be a worker for the Lord, and more about, oh, praise His great and glorious name. I think both of them are beneficial. Spiritual songs are songs that will benefit and edify us and grow us spiritually, and they can be upon any biblical subject that would be edifying and exhortation. But to just have just one type of song be characteristically is sung. And that is, there is one drawback in sacred selection songbook. I just remember from my youth, it seemed like we sung a lot of songs by being workers for the Lord and stand up for Jesus and things like that, and not as many that were specifically written as hymns, as songs of praise to God. You should have maybe some balance. You have to have balance in preaching. It's probably pretty good for song leaders to think about that and have balance in the songs that you sing as well. That's just my opinion. Anybody? Mind you all talking about? Yes, Dave.
I have a question. You might partially answer that and then comment if you answered that. We have all these psalms in the Book of Psalms. And are they all sung or just repeated, you know? I mean, we know definitely some of them, they're singing.
Practice?
I mean, are they singing all these psalms? We know that some they are, but some of them doesn't seem like they'd fit into singing.
Well, I don't know. I think that...
they are if they didn't.
Yeah, I think it's a book of psalms. I can't think of it not of any situation. I mean, for example, a good portion of the psalms that were written by David, who was a musician and a poet. He certainly was. He was a man of literature, and so it was his practice to offer up praise to God. The songs that were sung were the songs that were written by I mean, you could say poetry. Now, as far as poetry set to music in the classic sense, I know that, again, lyrics and such are things that are, not lyrics, melody and such are things that are of more recent origin. Mondo, do you have any insight with regard to the history, since I mean, you're a music major, as far as the when actual writing of like lyrics and such came about? Because I've been told, but I haven't really made a study of it, that it was typical that in like in ancient times that it was a chant. It was probably a monotone kind of chant.
As far as what we sing now?
No. Well, I'm just saying that the history of singing, put it that way, way back in the past. The
history of singing.
Yeah.
And size.
Yeah, just was it? I mean, do they have even any indication, any way of knowing as to what the
as far as the kind of
style was?
I mean, the songs are certain.
Yeah, the songs.
There's no way to know a certain style or how it was sung. I mean, thinking about it, all the songs that David wrote are very personal.
Yeah.
They're very, very personal. So I could think, as far as these songs, it's something that maybe he just sang to himself. A lot of these also are written for, there's notes that are included there for a choir director. I don't know how accurate that is, maybe for a group singing. What I can think of mostly here is that most of this was written down as far as the words are concerned, but it was passed on through almost a public set. It was passed on by rote. And so people would hear this and imitate the words, learn the words, and learn whatever tune they went to. Would be my best guess.
Yeah.
I mean, without
well, and what you do find in the actual accounts, for example, regarding Miriam's Song of the Sun, Song of Victory, that there was it almost like she made it up on the spot. In other words, it was an offering of praise, and it was a when you're talking about those types of circumstances, this was a time of great joy. It was the expression of that joy publicly, and there was tambourines, and there was the gyrating and all that stuff that was going along with it. So it was that kind of musical setting. But one thing, of course, to keep in mind is that all of these are the product of inspiration. The Holy Spirit inspired, of course, the entirety of the Bible. So even though they were private, And I mean, you're talking about in one instance the confession of David with regard to his sin with Bathsheba and the evil that he had done as one of the Psalms. They nevertheless had a purpose in that they edified and encouraged the nation of Israel as these things were compiled and put in the book itself. So, just as something to think about. Yes, Jacob?
You mentioned, sacred selections and that kind of thing. So going back to that, Colossians 3:16, it says that whether we sing psalms or hymns or spiritual songs, that they should teach us and admonish us. And I think that the fad today is to not think about that.
Yeah, well, that's another thing to put out, is the mechanics of it, because we can become so enamored with the mechanics. But, let's sing around, for example.
But even with the word.
That it can be actually. Yeah, well, yeah. I actually even wrote a lesson. I don't know if y'all remember this. Some of you weren't here at the time. A song is very popular today, and the sentiments that are expressed in the song are good. The chorus, our God is an awesome God. He reigns from heaven above with something, something love. Our God is an awesome God. Okay, so that's the chorus. I'm sorry, if I listen to it, I would know the words. But I look at that song, and by the way, the actual verses of the song are very flippant. I don't like them at all. But there's nothing wrong with the sentiment that is found in the chorus. And it is sung often in the camps, and you'll hear it sometimes from time to time in worship service. And basically what happens is you sing the chorus four times to get enough, because otherwise it's over in 25 seconds. The song's over, so you do it four times. Now, that's fine, but there's not a lot of sentiment expressed in that. It's basically, our God is an awesome God. And there are some other songs that are sung the same way. And I compare that with how great thou art and the sentiment that is expressed in that song. That's the sublime, the poetry, the the teaching that is done as you sing four verses about great thou art. And I'm sorry, I think that more edifying is being done by that old standard than by this, even though it's got a neat tune to it, and it's something that is, it can touch the heart. The second thing that Jacob kind of alluded to, or at least maybe I jumped in and made reference to as well, is that we do need to continue to remember the primary purpose of it. This can involve a number of things. It's good to learn new songs, but do keep in mind that it is very difficult to be concentrating on the words if you're having to learn the music. And some of us young guys, when we lead songs out of the supplement and all,
really?
Just keep in mind that the older Christians, they don't know those songs. And if you do too much of that, then they're struggling the entire, I won't ask for a show of hands, but I can tell you I've talked to some of them, and it can be frustrating to them that they don't get as much out of the singing simply because they have a hard time and that they don't know those songs. And so that's a problem. And then the third thing is with regard to the actual songs themselves. If you have, and somebody might answer me how this can happen, but if you've got four parts singing four different lyrics entirely in a round type situation, how can you be edified by what someone else is singing to you? I guess I can be edified by what the basses are singing as I hear them sing to me, but I'm sure not going to want the sopranos are singing because they're singing something entirely different. I'm having to concentrate to keep up with it. I don't want to try to get poetic license and the artistic aspects of this out of it completely, because I know that I, like everyone else, have sung bass leads that have different words than the sopranos and everything. And a part of it is I've become so familiar with those songs that I've grown up with that I know both sets of words. So as I'm singing mine, I could be listening to them as well. I'm getting more out of it, where these other songs are songs that I'm new to. I'm just saying that as song leaders, we need to be careful about that, because it can be. If what you do does not edify, then you're defeating the purpose of singing. One of the purposes of singing and edifying and being outward in the heart. Yes, yes.
I'd say that first of all, there are different ability levels when it comes to singing. There are different ability levels when it comes to hearing. Some people will go to listen to a symphony and they'll hear, 15 different instruments, and other people will go and they'll hear drums, bass, and violin, and I assume those other people are doing something up there. So some people can pick all those things out. This is a practical thing, though. If you can find the bass note, the do in the song, just stick right around it. Don't even worry about singing the melody, because the words are more important. So you can just sit there and ignore the melody and just try to stay at some sort of bass thing so that you're getting the most important part out. And then next time maybe you can pick up more of the melody and things like that.
As the song is being learned.
Right. As the song is being learned. Because, if you're focusing on notes, you're not going to even see the words. I see some people that start off with a brand new song and they hum it a lot and try to get the melody down. Oh, that's better to get the words down. If you've memorized, if you're trying to learn different parts of a song, if it's a song you already know and you've memorized the words, you don't have to look at the words at all. And you can look at the notes, and that's a better way, edification-wise, to learn a song.
Yes. Again, always the key and the emphasis should be on edifying and the words themselves rather than the notes. That's a good point that you make there. That's one of the reasons why I like the bass part so much, as it is in our song. I am sure that somewhere in some type of music, bass is complex. Although I hear those tubas on the football field going boom, boom, boom. And that's the way bass is. You know do, you know so, you got the bass down. That's about all you have to do. So I always go to the bass line and you struggle and you'll be able to hear the melody. Yes.
Well, I guess we can wait till next. I was going to make my comment, but we haven't left it.
Just say, you might whisper in my ear, so I'll be ready for it next week. Thank y'all for coming today. Appreciate it.